From the best-selling Christian Heroes Then and Now series, YWAM Publishing presents Mary Slessor, Forward into Calabar, by Janet and Jeff Benge, read for you by Rebecca Gallagher. For information about other titles in this outstanding series, please visit our website at ywampublishing.com or call us at 800-922-2143. Chapter 1. The Vice Consul of Okoyung. The hot West African sun beat down on the clearing at the edge of the village. It was mid-afternoon, and the court hearing that had started early in the morning was dragging on. Okpono, his near-naked body glistening in the sun, was once again making a spirited argument as to why his brother-in-law should be forced to pay back the money he owed him. The vice consul of Okoyung sat cross-legged in the shade of a huge kapok tree, listening to the argument as she skillfully worked the knitting needles in her hands, passing the woolen yarn over the end of each needle to form a new stitch. The knitting seemed to have a calming effect on her and on the crowd who had gathered to view the proceedings. The vice consul had already heard Okpono make his argument at least 20 times and listened as Okpono's brother-in-law refuted it each time. She could tell the men were beginning to tire of talking, and soon it would be her turn to take over and render judgment. Experience had taught her that it was important for those involved in the case to talk about it until they could talk no more, and were ready to listen to what she had to say. It amazed Mary Slessor, the blue-eyed, red-haired Scottish woman who served as vice consul, that she was the one deciding such disputes, and that so many people came to observe the proceedings. When Mary first entered the Okoyung region years before, people fled from her in terror. They had never seen a white woman before, and they took her red hair as a sign her head was on fire. But over the years, Mary had won the trust of the people in the region. Now, the people called her the White Ma, and instead of fleeing, they flocked around her. No one had done more than the White Ma to change the cruel and inhumane customs and practices that had terrorized the people's lives for so many years. Mary focused her attention on the case. Okpono's brother-in-law was now wrapping up another rebuttal to Okpono's argument, and it was time for Mary to start thinking about rendering judgment. The decision was cut and dried, really, but Mary still had a few things to think on. She was irritated that Okpono would take his brother-in-law to court when he himself neglected his children and took delight in regularly beating his wives, especially the wife who was the sister of the man he had dragged into court. What troubled Mary the most was that the brother-in-law was a hard-working, honorable man who had simply had some bad luck. So while the case was plain and simple, the brother-in-law owed the money and needed to pay it back, Mary was concerned that justice be administered in a broader sense. Besides understanding that debts needed to be repaid, people needed to see that it wasn't okay to neglect their children or beat their wives. Mary sat knitting in silence, mulling over what to do. After several minutes, she laid aside her knitting and got to her feet. Looking Okpono's brother-in-law squarely in the face, she said, "I find you guilty and order you to pay Okpono the money you owe." Dejected at losing, the brother-in-law dropped his head. At the same time, a large smirk crept across Okpono's face. But Mary had a surprise for Okpono. She spoke again to the brother-in-law. "I also order you to give Okpono a whipping right here and now, and be sure you make it hard, or I will find you for going easy on him." A look of shock quickly replaced the smirk on Okpono's face. At the same time, looks of satisfaction crept across the faces of those in the crowd. This was justice. The White Ma truly understood their ways. With her duties as vice consul discharged for the day, Mary gathered up her knitting and placed it into a bag. It was time to eat and then share more of the gospel message with the village. In the morning, Mary would begin the trek back to Ikenge, the village where she lived. As she sat at the fire that night, eating a bowl of corn stew with her fingers, Mary wondered what the people back at the Baxter Cotton Mill in Dundee, Scotland, would think if they saw her now. They would probably be amazed that she had managed to stay alive for so long in such a harsh environment, especially when so many other missionaries had died within a few years of arriving in Calabar. They might also marvel at the fact that the 11-year-old girl who had started working at the mill was now vice consul, the sole administrator of British law in the Okoyong region. Of course, Mary would not have believed it possible back then either, but here she was. There was no denying it. She had grown a lot from being that small girl working at the mill. In fact, she now felt more at home among the people of the Okoyong region than she did among Scottish people in Scotland. Indeed, she now referred to the Africans as her people, and they referred to her as Ika Kapukpru Owo, the mother of us all. It was all a long way from life in Dundee.